As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey, it's Andy. Quick programming note. We're going to give Ari Wasserman another day to recover from his bachelor party. Apparently, it was pretty epic, and I want to make sure he is completely able to describe all of the debauchery, plus this mind-blowing riddle that he keeps telling us about. And we're going to rank the most important people on each of some of your favorite college football teams for this upcoming season. So we're going to do that on Wednesday's show. Today, we're talking to Matt Fortuna. We got a lot to talk about. Matt wrote a great story in The Athletic about coaches who have gone from coaching in college to the NFL and why they're never, ever coming back. Plus, we talk a lot about Notre Dame. Remember, Matt and Peep Sampson are co-hosts of the Shamrock. They are our foremost experts on Notre Dame football. So we talk about the transition from Brian Kelly to Marcus Freeman and the long, long walk Brian Kelly took up a flight of stairs that you probably haven't heard about yet. Also, we talk about Pat Narduzzi's extension at Pittsburgh. 2030, that's a long time, but that may be the solid situation, the security that Pitt needs. We all know how we feel about Pitt on this podcast. We don't bet on them anymore because they made me eat mayonnaise that one time, and then I bet on them again. I lost again, and I just, you know, can't trust them. But they found a coach they can trust. He's going to be there until at least 2030, at least according to this contract. We'll talk about that with Matt Fortuna next on the show. Matt, how are things going? And have you gotten a chance to recover from a coaching change at Notre Dame that you and Pete Sampson had to cover so thoroughly a few months ago?
Well, thanks for having me, Andy. It does feel like it's been a while, probably because we did like every Tuesday during the playoff rankings and we just got so used to it. So it's been a minute. You know, the coaching change was take every single angle of a coaching search, a coaching move, throw it into like a 3-day window. And that's what me and Pete had to deal with. I mean, we were fairly blindsided by it. I mean, just the idea of Brian Kelly going to LSU. I don't think the idea of Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame was that shocking. Although again, he had just become the winningest coach there. They were still alive for a playoff berth at that point in time, and he had just pretty much hand built his own personal house right on campus there. So it was surprising. In some ways, Notre Dame took mercy on us because they made an internal promotion that same week. So it wasn't this crazy multi-week or in-season search like USC's where, you know, you've got leaks coming left and right. You've got some coaches expressing interest for a leverage play. It was pretty cut and dry. So in that regard, they took mercy on us. It's so far from a media perspective, you know, everyone's undefeated, right? It's a honeymoon period. Well, I guess he's not undefeated. He coached a bowl game, but Marcus Freeman is still with this full staff that he hired is undefeated. And so everyone's in a good mood and they're pretty accessible. And it's been pretty fun to cover so far. And it's been a change for me. I mean, I've covered them from the second year of the Kelly era on. So this is the first time I had a Notre Dame coaching search. Pete, on the other hand, had like five or six, most of
yeah, he's a wily veteran
period of time.
So
Now, we had Luke Fickell on, and he says of the ex-Buckeyes who have become head coaches, he still likes his chances in the head coach Royal Rumble over Marcus Freeman. But I feel like Marcus Freeman's got an age advantage. Fickell, you know, the traditional folk-style wrestling, but doesn't Marcus Freeman have some kind of judo training in his past as well?
Yeah, I mean, he's the son of a military man. I mean, you can't underestimate that. The guy was an unfortunate, you know, heart valve test away from being in the NFL probably, and was a high level performer on back-to-back national runner-ups at Ohio State. And I mean, you see him now, he's a lot slimmer than he was in his playing days, but he's in the weight room with those guys. You can see the Twitter videos, like in a way that most head coaches probably aren't, you know, at the crack of dawn. So, I mean, we'd probably have to go down the list to determine who's the best. I mean, I guess Steve Adazio doesn't count as a Buckeye because he was with Urban, but not in Ohio State. Same with Charlie Strong, but
I still think Vrabel, like Fickell says he can take Vrabel.
Vrabel,
you know, we don't usually count him because he's in the NFL, but I just feel like Vrabel has the right level of intelligence slash crazy. When you play that long in the NFL, you just have to have that. And that's where I think he's got the advantage. But I'm curious, Matt, because you know the situation at Notre Dame did stabilize very quickly, and Freeman obviously it's crazy because he'd only been there a year. You know, he'd been working on Fickell's staff at Cincinnati before that. Famously picked Notre Dame over LSU as the defensive coordinator, but once he got that job, you started watching the stuff that came out of there. It felt like he'd been there forever.
It really did, Andy, and it wasn't just the defensive players, which you would expect, right, from a defense coordinator. You know, there are a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? Stereotypes, for lack of a better term, when it comes to calling someone a player's coach or saying this guy's loved by his locker room and he's a great recruiter, et cetera, a lot of coded language there. That's not the case with Marcus Freeman. Obviously, he is a player's coach. He is a great recruiter. But from day one, when he got there as defense coordinator, he really won over that whole university. And when I say whole university, I'm talking about administrators, high-level donors, the rest of the people in the football building. I mean, when the announcement became official, I remember it was Friday morning. I tweeted a couple minutes beforehand, and I'm boarding a plane to go to Las Vegas for the Pac-12 title game that night. And I got a call from a donor I hadn't heard from a while, who was the giddiest I'd ever heard of. And this is a wealthy man who's experienced a lot of success, both personal and professional, his career. And he just said, the minute we got him a year ago, the minute I met him a year ago, I knew this was our next head coach. And Marcus Freeman really has had that effect on pretty much everyone he's come across so far at Notre Dame. And even, you know, deep into his past, I remember I was at the Combine, which we'll get to with the story we'll talk about later. But I remember I was at the Combine a couple weeks ago, and I was with Jason Lloyd, our Cleveland columnist, who a lifetime ago covered Ohio State. And I said, did you by chance cover Marcus Freeman, a player? He goes, I did. I loved him. He was great. I ran into Doug Le Maurice from Cleveland.com. Same thing. I remember writing about Marcus Freeman wanting to become an AD when he was a player. Instead, he became a head coach. So you always want to, like, we're jaded in our business, you know, by nature. We've seen so much stuff, and, you know, we're always approaching things with a skeptical eye, but, you know, not as if I'm looking for dirt on Marcus Freeman, but every single person I've come across in his life, from Cincinnati, from Ohio State, from Purdue, from Kent State, from Notre Dame, every single one of them has the exact same things to say about him. And so far, that's proven to be true. Of course, they go 8-4 next year. I'm sure a lot of people will be singing a different tune, but right now everyone's undefeated and everyone's having a good time in South Bend.
Well, and I think it says something, because Notre Dame is not really a place that makes impulsive decisions. And that they arrived at that decision so quickly, when everyone knew there would have been some pretty accomplished candidates. I mean, I think Matt Campbell would have probably been interested in that job. Luke Fickell probably would have been willing to listen. So some very accomplished people would have wanted to talk to them about that job, and they shut it down pretty quickly. So he must have made a pretty big impression on them in a short time.
He definitely did, Andy. And part of it too is the, you know, the time frame of it and the position the program was in. You know, Brian Kelly isn't exactly getting, you know, Christmas cards anytime soon, I think, from anyone in South Bend. But the reality of the situation is that man did a hell of a job fixing beyond broken program when he got there. And it was, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's on autopilot right now, but like the pieces are there for them to win big immediately.
I remember being at the College Football Awards show in 2009 when they had just fired Charlie Weiss. They had not hired Brian Kelly yet. And Lewis Nix, may he rest in peace, committed to Notre Dame. And I was like, wow, that's the first piece of good news that program's gotten. And I can't remember how long. And it's just now you look at it, they are perennial College Football Playoff contenders. The one year they played in the ACC, they played for the ACC title. The recruiting is actually better now than it has been in those previous years when they were winning a bunch of games. So it is interesting to see how much Kelly did in the time he was there. But you're right, the personality won, and the way he left probably will probably keep him from getting his due for that from anybody there.
The way he left, I mean, that's just, that was the most surprising part to me, right? Like, he's been a pretty smart guy in terms of non-football matters most of his career. And for him to leave and leave on those terms and leave in the middle of a playoff chase, like, you just pissed away your legacy, man, at arguably the most famous college football program in all the land. So that part was why it was so perplexing to me. And the other part, I think he really erred in coming back the next morning to explain to his team that he was leaving. I think there will be people committing to Notre Dame, and probably already are people who have committed to Notre Dame because of Marcus Freeman. No disrespect to Brian Kelly, but I don't think anyone ever committed to Notre Dame because of Brian Kelly. They committed because it was Notre Dame, they're a good program, and they want to go to the place. And I think that's where, look, Lincoln Riley leaves Norman, and the first question is, you know, how many assistants are going to go with them? How many recruits are going to go with them? How many current players are going to go with them? And as we've seen, it was a lot. That has not been the case from South Bend to Baton Rouge with Brian Kelly. Obviously, he took a few assistants with him, but he was never a player's coach, right? And when you're not a player's coach, and when you take a CEO type of approach to this job, like, it's not all warm and cuddly. It's very businesslike, and it was reciprocated on the other end when he decided to up and leave. And the one part, and we've shared this on the Shamrock. I'm not sure if I've shared it on your show, Lev, but I think it will show kind of the loss in translation aspect of this. Everyone saw the video, right? You saw the video.
Yeah.
Brian, 3 minutes or so.
Meeting could have been an email. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So Pete gets a hold of that video before it goes public. We write the story overnight, print it the next morning. And Pete gets a call from someone at Notre Dame who's in the room and says, you need to print a correction to your story. And me and Pete are like, correction? Like, we literally saw the video. Like, this is the most rock solid thing we've ever written. And the person said, no, you had a line in there that said, you know, after Brian Kelly spoke, he went out to his right to the door in the Goog and went off to LSU. And like, no, actually, out of video sight, and you've been in the auditorium, right?
Yeah,
the Goog,
yeah.
Where they do press conferences or they used to. So apparently, after Brian Kelly finished speaking and it was dead silent, he decided it was a good idea to walk up the stairs in the auditorium from the first floor to the second floor. And the only reason,
like, the reverse of USC coming down the peristyle entrance.
Yeah, I mean, it was. And according to the people who we spoke to who were in that room, it was the most awkward 30 seconds of everyone's life because he just turned beet red and had his head down. And I don't know if he thought he was going to get a standing ovation or some kind of send off, but like, the way Notre Dame players saw it was, screw you. Like, don't tell us we're one of the four best teams and up and leave us when we're literally, I mean, they were one game away from making the college football playoff if another result goes their way, that conference game Saturday. So all of it just kind of boggled my mind as far as how quickly it happened, when it happened, and then how quickly it kind of stabilized and how quickly that place rallied around Marcus Freeman and the new regime. Because, you know, again, if you were to tell me Notre Dame or any blue blood was to lose the winningest coach in program history, my first natural thought is that's a negative, right?
Yeah.
And I won't go so far as to say it's positive. I mean, we're comparing the winningest coach in Notre Dame history to a guy who's coached one career game as a head coach in college football. And there are absolutely going to be some growing pains with Marcus Freeman, but there is a level of optimism and excitement in South Bend that there hasn't been in quite some time right now.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Now, going from one place where a coach who was there for a long time just left to a place where there's been a coach who he had a chance to leave, probably. He put out a Wolf of Wall Street video saying he was staying. Then he won the league, and now it looks like Pat Narduzzi is at Pitt for a long, long time. He signed an extension through 2030 at least. We don't know exactly the details because Pitt being, you know, this Pennsylvania's open records laws, pretty crappy. You don't get to learn very much. So we don't really know much in terms of pay raise, how much is guaranteed, buyout, all that stuff. But Pat Narduzzi has signed up through 2030. And it's interesting because when Pat took the job, if you told me Michigan State would have opened while he was there, that D'Antonio would have stepped down, that I would have thought he would go there. But he seems to have found his bliss at Pittsburgh. It's been up and down, but they're in a great spot right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think naturally we would have thought the next step after Pitt would be Michigan State. Now, again, much like Notre Dame, the timing of that one was weird because it happened right after the second signing day. That search was an absolute mess. They had to overpay to get Mel Tucker after striking out on him and Luke Fickell initially. So I get why Pat Narduzzi would take a look at that situation, see his mentor step away from it and think, that's not for me. I got a good thing going here in Pittsburgh. Pitt's been, you know, a little bit like NC State to me in the ACC as far as teams that are, you like, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think both programs, I think Pitt broke through the ceiling this year of winning the ACC, so you don't want to criticize them too much. But I think both programs have had seasons where you think, you know, why weren't they just a little bit better than what they've been? But you look back historically, in NC State's case, they've never really been all that good.
Right.
In Pitt's case, they haven't been that good since they were an independent with Dan Marino.
I was going to say, you go back to Johnny Majors and that. Like, Pitt was insanely good in the late 70s, early 80s. Like, if you look at those records, it's pretty crazy. Jackie Sherrill getting hired away by Texas A&M was huge, but they kept on winning. But yeah, it's been a long time since they were kind of nationally elite. Narduzzi has made them better than they were. They were kind of wildly inconsistent. I know they had years. They played in a BCS bowl. They played in the Fiesta Bowl one year. I think they lost to right. Urban Meyer's Utah yeah. team after the 04 season. But yeah, this has been a pretty stable period. But you're right. There is that now. I may be a little bitter because they did make me eat mayonnaise after losing to NC State in 2020. But I think about like last year, they win the ACC, great season, lost to Western Michigan at the beginning of the season. Like, it just, they can't ever seem to put all of that together. But, you know, I this is something I get into on the show a lot, Matt. I'm curious where you fall on this, specifically with Narduzzi, because I always say, you know, a lot of these guys, you don't have to overpay. You don't have to lock them up forever, because they're not that different than someone else right. you might get. I do think Narduzzi is a little bit different than someone else you might get. So I can see the impetus for locking him down.
Well, I think when you're in Pittsburgh, right, you're not Clemson or Alabama, and that's no disrespect to Pittsburgh, but like, you kind of have to overpay when you've got yeah. a good thing going. The same way Michigan State had to overpay for Mel Tucker.
Mel Tucker, you're right. Yeah, that's a good point.
They were justified giving him $95 million. That was a little. You do have to overpay to keep your talent. And in Pittsburgh's case, I mean, I think recent history is important for context here. They had four head coaches.
Yeah, they were scarred. The Todd Graham thing.
Before that, Mike Haywood.
That's right.
And Todd Graham after a year. And then Paul Christ, who went, I think, 500 over 3 years there. But like, that was considered really, really good because
you can't blame Chris for leaving the way he did.
They went to the ACC during that transition as well. So yeah. It was a program that really needed kind of just an adult in the room to be there and stabilize things. I thought Paul Christ did a good job of that at the time before going back to his alma mater at Wisconsin. And Pat Narduzzi, a guy who had a lot of head coaching opportunities, I think, for many years before Pittsburgh, when he was Mark D'Antonio's defense coordinator, finally, you know, went up to the Power Five level at Pittsburgh. And look, you know, Pat, I know Pat, I like the guy because there's never a dull moment with him. Like, he's always going to tell you exactly what's on his mind, and you might not always agree with him. And I do think some of that, you know, kind of loose cannon personality, his team reflects that sometimes as far as the inconsistency with which they play. Western Michigan game this year being the perfect example of that. But at the end of the day, when you win 11 games, when you win the first outright conference championship in that program's history, when you have a Heisman finalist at quarterback in Kenny Pickett, and a guy who might be the first quarterback drafted this year, a guy who broke pretty much every record that Dan Marino set, mm-hmm. you're doing something right there. I mean, if you said whatever, if we had this maybe a year ago, this podcast, and said Clemson's run's going to end eventually, who's going to be the team that ends it? Pittsburgh would not have been the first team.
No, neither would Wake Forest have been, and that's who they played in the championship game. So, yeah, I do think it'll be interesting to see in this era how that works. You know, they have not had a lot of transfer issues. They've pretty much kept their roster.
Good guys coming in, but they
they have good players coming in, but not a lot of good players going out. And that's, I think that's going to become the thing we look at. How many of your good players do you lose? And players seem to enjoy playing for Narduzzi. And I think that's going to become a metric that we have to kind of keep track of, because there's certain coaches. We had Brock Purdy on the show a few weeks ago, and he put it really well, and it was a way I hadn't thought about it. He's like, Matt Campbell's not going to have a problem in this era. Matt Campbell doesn't lie to recruits. He doesn't, you know, he kind of is who he is. And so guys enjoy playing for him. They feel like they weren't sold a bill of goods in recruiting. He's like, Brock Purdy said, he's like, there are a bunch of coaches who are going to get exposed by these transfer rules really soon. And so you look at Narduzzi, where for the most part, it seems like their best players stay and play at Pitt their entire careers. That's a good sign.
It is. Again, it's a unique job, right? Like, you don't have an on-campus stadium despite all that tradition. And I remember speaking to people in that program in the later part of this year, just talking about the, you know, the season, the ups and downs. And someone there told me, like, look, that, not to excuse that Western Michigan loss, but we just went on the road to Knoxville, Tennessee the week before, 100,000 screaming fans, a talented team. I mean, maybe not the best team in the world, but star ratings wise, they have more talent than we did. We win a tightly contested, hostile game on the road, and we come home to play a MAC team in front of a half empty pro stadium, like at noon. Human nature kicks in there.
Quite a drop there.
As a coach, like, you get paid to kind of avoid that, but it is reality.
Yeah.
And so I think Pitt's done a better job, or Pat Narduzzi has done a better job this year than maybe in previous years of coaching out of that, of getting his guys to not just play to the level of their competition, because again, they had a very good season this year. But even the Miami game, I mean, there were some very questionable calls at the end there. Mm-hmm. I think Miami with Tyler Van Dyke was a much better team toward the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the year. To me, that's a forgivable loss, as weird as that may sound. So,
this is my issue. Like, the big joke on our podcast is never bet on Pitt. And that's my issue is that they're almost always playing to the level of their competition, which makes them win games they probably shouldn't and lose games they probably shouldn't.
The Mayo bath or the Mayo lunch
at
NC State game a couple of years ago, because I saw that one from a million miles away. But the other part of it too, look at the Coastal. Like, Mario Cristobal's not playing around. Miami's going to be a force. At least
North Carolina's been recruiting well. They're probably going to be good.
Virginia just hired one of the hottest assistant coaches in the country. Virginia Tech just brought a new coach. If you've already got that built-in stable advantage and are the defending conference champions, like, you need to elongate that. You need to maximize that and make sure that you've got something that no one else in that division has. And right now, I think Pittsburgh has that going for them.
Well, and so they do share a stadium with the Steelers. And I don't want to talk to you about the NFL, because you had a great story coming out of the Combine where you talked to some former college coaches that you knew who are now working in the NFL, and you did a roundtable with them about what life is like, the difference in life in college and the NFL. And I think there were, if you'd done this story 5-10 years ago, you'd have had a bunch of guys saying, well, I loved working in college. I like working in the NFL. If a better job comes along in college, I'm probably going to take that just because I... But you had some dudes tell you, I'm not going back. Like, I'm done. Like, it is definitely the changes in college football. And look, I'm not saying that this is necessarily a bad thing. That college coaching at the highest level still pays plenty of money, and there are plenty of people willing to take that money. But it does seem like if you're given your druthers, rather than coaching the environment in college now, you're going to the NFL.
Yeah, Andy, I think, like you said, a couple of years ago, it was beauties in the eye of the beholder, right? Like, there was a control aspect of college that was very attractive to coaches who are largely control freaks. Mm-hmm. That control aspect is out the window right now, yeah, with NIL and transfer portal, at least in the short term. I mean, you're recruiting your own roster year round while also recruiting future classes year round. And there's very little vacation time. There's very little downtime. The money is such that if you're a big time head coach or coordinator, the pressure is there. And if you're not a big time head coach or coordinator, the jobs are more demanding than they were before. The salaries are not keeping up, at least with those of the people making the most money in your organization. So that part of it was not too surprising to me to hear that from some of the people who had left college. But I mean, the idea for the story came through the people you know in this business. And every time I talked to someone who was in the NFL, I would just, you know, think to myself, like, why would they ever go back? The way you're
so happy. Yeah. Like, you get real days off.
You don't have to recruit. You coach football. You're dealing with adults. Like, you're not, your phone's not on because, like, there's always something happening, right? You're on vacation. Even if it's not recruiting, someone got arrested. Someone got this. Someone has academic issues. That's not a factor in the NFL. Obviously, bad stuff can happen there, but they're mostly adults who understand contracts, understand the stakes that they're in, and are playing to get their next contract. They're not going to do anything to mess that up. So that part of it was what got me going as far as this could be a good story idea. And talking to people at the combine, talking to a few on the phone afterward, the bluntness of most of them as far as, like, I'm never going back was...
I know, it was like, pretty, hell no!
A little bit surprising as far as you rarely get that kind of candor, but... when you read the whole story and you hear these experiences, it makes sense. And there was a comment in there saying you should do the reverse with NFL guy, or college guys who left the NFL. And I think that could be a good idea down the road. But in the college realm, even when it is anonymous, you're always recruiting. So yes. I think it'd be harder to get that kind of candor from college coaches than it would be from NFL guys.
We'll be right back after these words. Well, in the examples we've seen, they're hopping right back. I mean, Joe Brady was great in college. And you might argue that given what happened with the Panthers, Joe Brady might be more successful as a college coach if he wanted to recruit, if he wanted. But I'm not sure he wants that life. Liam Cohen came and did a really great job at Kentucky last year. He's gone. Right. He's back with the Rams. So, I mean, it's tough to turn down the idea of... They're both the similar jobs. You're coaching football, but one, you've got to talk to 16-year-olds all day, and one, you don't. And I mean, that's a pretty easy decision.
Yeah, it's recruiting's obviously the biggest part of it, but there's so many little things, and some of it couldn't make the story, but some of the duties that these guys were telling me that they had to do for their head coach or for someone else in the building
in college
on the side. Yeah, it's, you know. Whether it's camps, you know, whether it's speaking arrangements, whether it's this, whether it's that. And, like, they're not seeing an extra dime out of all this stuff. And, again, no one's going to cry for the six-figure college coach. I get that. But burnout is real. I mean, I don't know the guy. I haven't spoken to him. He had nothing to do with the story. But I look at a guy like Matt Luke and think, you're 45 going on 65 based on pictures. You just reached the height of your profession, and you just decided, like –
yeah, and you're a good offensive line coach. Yeah. So, like, it's not like he was bad and they
no, it was like
threw him out. Like, he's good, but just didn't want to do it. Yeah,
they just don't. And it's funny because I feel like we've swung so far from one way to another, right? Where a few years ago, clearly there was a power imbalance as far as who's making the money in college sports and how the people playing college sports aren't making any. And it's NIL, portal, I think all these things are good things. But because the NCAA was scratching and clawing and kicking and screaming to fight against this stuff ever happening.
There's no plan for
so far out of the bottle that now it really is chaotic. And I mean, if you're a good college player right now, I think you have more power than if you're a good NFL player because you don't have a contract and you can leave whenever you want.
And you have more power than the average good NFL player. I think the great NFL, like the QB, the Aaron Donald,
that type of
player
just started the last couple of years.
Right. But you're right about the coaches. And I had not thought about it this way. This is a good way to put it. 5-10 years ago, if you were a control freak, the NFL would scare you and college would be your safe place. Now, I think your level of control in either place is probably about the same. You still have more control as a college head coach because you control the roster. And unless you're Bill Belichick, you probably don't in the pros. But if you're an assistant coach, you don't control much of anything. And that's the same as being an assistant in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a high-level Power 5 coach at any position, you're probably making a nice chunk of change relative to what you'd be making in the NFL. Like, money's significant. Like, we can't beat around the bush with that. And I think you're going to make more money at the college level when you're at the peak of the college level.
If you're like a coordinator,
if you're a coordinator or wherever you may be. Now, some college people have said to me in the past, you know, the NFL is less attractive to them because like people get fired even more, it seems, in NFL. Like, I don't have the data right now to tell you what the lifespan is of each. But you're basically an assistant coach. Now, they do get recycled a lot, and most of these guys who lose jobs get jobs very shortly afterward. But it is different. I did appreciate the one coach I talked to, a guy I've known for a while, who's been in the NFL for quite some time now. And he said, you know what? I was meant to be a college coach in my 20s. I'm glad I did it then because I like interacting with kids. I like having them all over to my house for barbecues. I like, you know, them playing, the kids coming up, like family. I like mentoring them and so forth. He goes, but at this age of my life where I've got my own family, I've got kids, I've got, you know, sports games to go to, dance recitals to go to, I'm very glad I scratched that itch when I did because I don't ever see myself going back right now. He goes, but I also don't know if I'd be as good of an NFL coach as I am right now if not for that experience. And so that was like the most personal kind of clear explanation.
Yeah. One of the coaches you talked to talked about relationship building. Cause I always thought, you know, the NFL coaches don't really have that much of a relationship with their players compared to the college coaches. But this coach put it really well. It says it's just different because those NFL players are at such a different stage in your life where they are getting married, they're having kids, all things that as an older person that you remember that more vividly than you remember being. Like, I remember when our kids were young a lot more vividly than I remember being in college. So if I were dealing with someone on a daily basis who was going through having a newborn, wait, I am, it's Ari, but I have a lot fresher perspective on that than I would on being a freshman in college, for example.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if this is true anymore, but in the NFL, like, they can sense players can sense BS.
Yeah.
Like,
you're
not going to motivate them or use some slogan or, you know, all the stuff that we see college coaches use for recruiting. None of that's going to work on the pros. You either know ball or you don't. And if you know ball, they're going to respect you. And if they respect you, there's going to be the chance to have those kinds of relationships. And, you know, we beat this dead horse to death, but, you know, Urban Meyer, great example, right? Like, perfect college coach 5 years ago. I don't know how he'd fit in today's game, and not surprised he failed at the NFL level because he is a control freak. And that just isn't going to get it done with a roster of guys who don't care what you did in your previous life and whose respect you need to win over.
Which how can you help me get mine? Look, that's kind of the attitude in college. It was always the attitude in college. People forget that guys were still clawing and fighting for draft position and all that stuff. Now they're just doing that and also trying to get deals or trying to make more. And, you know, look, that's life. Every profession's like that. So I think it will begin to feel more normal in college, but there's a lot of coaches who were control freaks who chose that level because it gave them a larger measure of control. And they're just either going to let it go or they're going to leave and be replaced by a population that does not care as much about having absolute power.
Yeah, it's what's I hate to sound like all these administrators that I always make fun of every time they give out statements on these things. But like, what will the guardrails or parameters be on a transfer portal? Because at some point you can't have it be year round, right? You can't just.
Yeah, I think there's ways to do it where it doesn't have to be 100% year round and everybody can move when they want to move.
Do you think there are ways to do it like that?
I do. If you want to play the next season, like for example, there's no reason to have the transfer portal open in season because you can't play somewhere else this season.
Right.
So you're already on scholarship at the place. Reasonably, you can say, you suck it up for two more months and then you can go where you're going and they'll give you a scholarship and you'll be playing for them next year like you want to. And what's harmed? Who's harmed in that deal? You know, is the player's freedom of movement restricted in that deal? I don't think it is. But you've given the coaches a little more defined window of when they can go after these guys, when they can bring them on campus for a visit, that sort of thing. And they don't have to worry about it while they're trying to coach their own team. And also, maybe there's not so many impulsive type, I'm leaving. You know, I didn't play enough snaps this game. I'm out. Because that player may regret that decision too. So you give both sides a little bit of protection there without limiting what the players could actually do. Because I don't think you can, if you make it where you're blocking transfers, you're doing it, that's not going to work. You know, there will be a legal challenge to that and the schools will lose.
It sounds a little like the D.R. King situation at Houston, right? Like, yeah. Shut it down after four games. I'm coming back until I'm not. And that's right. That. But I think everyone inside Houston knew what was going on there. I mean, I'll be very curious to just see. I hate to use like these like Michael Bay like terms, day of reckoning or whatever you want to call it. But like, I came to a very simple conclusion through reporting that story, which is like, this is unsustainable for college coaches. It just is.
They'll burn out faster and we'll see more churn.
Yeah. But at some point, like the workforce right now, right? Every restaurant you walk into right now in America has a hiring sign. Like, there's got to be something that.
Well, there is something, Matt. There's always a solution to that.
What's that?
Money. You give somebody enough money, they'll do just about anything.
Everyone has a price. I agree with that. We'll see. I mean, but the quality is eventually going to go down, right? If you're throwing money around at your seventh choice for a wide receivers coach.
Is it really? Again, there's a finite number of jobs in the NFL too. So once they're full, if those people want to make money, and now they could do something else, but if they desire to coach ball and to make money, there's only one other place they can do it. So I don't think I don't know what Kevin Sumlin's making with the, what is it? He's with the Houston Gamblers. Is that
all I know? Is Bob now going by Robert Diaco is on Mike Riley's staff with the New Jersey team.
Robert Diaco. That sounds, we make fun of Bob Diaco a lot for things he said and did while the head coach at Connecticut. I realize nobody's found the civil conflict trophy and is one of the great mysteries of college football, but that man predicted games on Nickelodeon.
Yep. He sure did.
Way ahead of his time. Way ahead of his time. Speaking of things on your TV, I didn't watch the Oscars. Like everybody else, I saw the slap heard around the world on social media. But Matt Fortuna, I grew up watching a lot of pro wrestling, and my first thought was, this is a work. This is a shoot that turned into a work.
So
real or fake?
It was really funny because I usually don't follow or watch any of these award shows or anything like that. And I filed a story for today. I just sat down after dinner on the couch with my wife who had it on, and it was like maybe 5 minutes before.
Oh, wow. So you saw it live.
Yeah. Oh, so I saw it live.
You saw Will Smith walking up to Chris Rock and you're like,
we have YouTube TV, which is always delayed. And
yeah.
I just had no idea what was going on, but I'm a professional lip reader like everyone else. And I'm like, okay, look at like Katie, look at Will Smith saying right now, like, keep my wife's name out of your bleeping mouth. And so it's like the one time, like, I'm pretty disciplined when I'm watching sports. Like, I like to take everything in as it happens and form my own opinions and not just go on Twitter and see what everyone's talking about. With this, since I clearly don't know anything about Oscars and I didn't really understand if my TV just went out or not, I immediately went on.
Yeah, I went down a Will and Jada rabbit hole after all this too.
Yeah, so. I got the Cliff Notes version of that for my wife who reads all this stuff. And like, yeah, I mean, it's, I initially thought fake because as stated earlier, I'm pretty jaded and I watch a lot of wrestling. Well,
and my thing was their ratings were at an all time low last year.
And that got people talking.
And nobody was talking about the Oscars. And now everyone's talking about the Oscars.
I agree with all that. However, I don't know what's in it for Will Smith.
True. He did win Best Actor anyway.
Right. I don't know what's in for him. I did not see the movie. I will say, like, my 30,000 foot view of this whole situation, I felt really bad for the Williams family because this should have been like their crowning night.
Right. And he's basically using that as an excuse. Like, just like me playing Richard, I'm sure Venus and Serena are like, no, that doesn't.
I mean, you said you went down the rabbit hole. I think our listeners can do that on our own without us like explaining kind of the backstory there.
But here's the thing. The reason I think it's real, my initial response is this has to be fake. This has to be staged. There's two reasons I think it's real. One, Will Smith laughed at the dumb G.I. Jane joke. And then you see him turn to face Jada, who clearly is not amused, who is highly offended. And I can tell you, and I'm sure you can too, anybody who's been married a while understands this. Like, the second you see your wife looking like that, you better do something. I don't know if you got to do that, but you better do something.
In a nutshell, if that was me or you, I would agree. Because we've gone down this rabbit hole and we know way more about their relationship.
There's some history, yes.
There's just no logical conclusion for anything those two do, in my mind, as far as, like, you guys are operating on a different plane than I am right now.
The other thing that makes me think it's real is if you watch the slow-mo of the slap, the look on Chris Rock's face, like, what?
But, like, talk about a recovery. Clearly he was rattled, but, like, he just kept going.
Smith just went up there and smacked him.
I feel like you've got to be used to that or at least prepared for that when you're a comedian, I would guess, because, like, you're always going to piss off someone.
Right. Chris Rock has been a stand-up long enough that I'm sure no matter what happens, he can keep the show going. I'd be like, commercial!
Oscar!
Commercial!
Like, the other weird part, why I thought it was staged, and I don't now, but like why I at the time thought it might have been, was like everything just kept going. Like Will's still sitting there in the front row. Like usually like people freak out at the first thing that goes off script, and it just felt like, at least watching it on TV, like, okay, like that was the bit. Let's go on. And then the speech just kind of confused me even more, but was there any follow-up with any of this? I know I saw people saying like they told the reporters not to ask questions about this at the press conference. Like, has anyone commented on it that was actually involved?
I mean, other than the apology, I know he apologized to the Academy.
Just said, I'm sorry. Didn't say for a while.
But here's the thing. The Academy wins. And was it ABC that broadcast? Whoever was broadcasting it wins because here we are talking about it, and this is not an event we would have, because it's interesting, and I think of this through the lens of what we watch, how we watch college football and how that's changing and all these new media rights deals. There's so little that we watch live anymore that we need, you know, like, unless you'd have told me that something like that was going to happen, there's no way in hell I would have ever turned the Oscars on, and I didn't.
Sports is the most valuable product on TV.
Exactly. This is why the Big Ten is about to be rolling in money, because
they're already rolling in money. Let's make that clear. They're going
to
be rolling
to be rolling in more money, because when Minnesota and Wisconsin play, even if Vegas thinks Wisconsin's going to win, sometimes Minnesota wins.
Yeah,
and that's worth a lot of money.
Who's capable of doing some pretty funny stuff on live TV that's going to make people's jaws drop?
Exactly. So that's a very weird way of getting back to sports and all that stuff, but it's true. But if you want to explain to a person why, even though the ratings aren't necessarily what they were 20 years ago, why these companies are willing to fork over so much money for NFL games, for NBA games, for college football games. That's why. Because you didn't know you were going to get that moment at the Oscars. You do know you're going to get that moment when St. Peter's plays Kentucky or some, you know, at some point in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. You don't know which one, but you're going to get it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, leave it to the Oscars and however old Will Smith is now for me to actually hear the man curse or do something. Like, he was, he was the only clean rapper growing up.
Yeah,
was
I was like, going
to say. Curse of my records.
DJ Jazzy Jeff's like, man, we could have made so much more if you'd have just cussed.
I was half expecting the presenter to say, and the award for best actor goes to Will Smith for 5 minutes ago. And yeah, that was
Will Smith and Chris Rock for just now before that last commercial.
Or Chris Rock to come out off the top rope.
Yes.
Someone already dubbed it with Jim Ross.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was that man has a family. Absolutely. Matt Fortuna, thank you so much. We'll let you get back to your own family. But this has been spectacular, and we will have you back again very soon.
Awesome, Andy. Thanks for having me.